This is the beginning of Cosmic Fire Web Commentaries 13b. We're on page 1226 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. We've been examining the symbolism of the egoic, manifested creative hierarchies, unmanifested, and now the method of behavior of the manifested creative hierarchies. We've spent quite a bit of time talking about these manifested creative hierarchies as expressions of the love nature of the soul of Logos emanating from his second row of petals. You know, in a way, if you think about it, there's quite a relation between the second ray and the seventh. And we're looking at the creative hierarchies that are manifesting on the seventh plane, namely the etheric physical plane, cosmically considered, and a vibration coming from the second tier or row of petals of the solar logoic ego. Excuse me. Sorry. Solar logoic egoic lotus. The 2 and 7, again, they are all an expression of his love nature. And we are expecting some kind of divine coherence to result from this interplay. Okay, so he goes on to say that it is love limiting itself by desire, and for that which is desired. It's some kind of redemptive act. But the love of the egoic lotus, of the solar logos, working through his desire nature, expressed on the cosmic astral plane and descending into the cosmic physical plane for the sake of manifestation among the lower lives in order to lift those lives. So we have kind of a 2, 6, 7 lineup. It is love. See, think about the love here for just a second. You know, we're told that what we call pure love is coming from the cosmic astral plane, and the Christ had a cosmic connection with this, and is expressing this love of the cosmic astral plane through himself and for our benefit. What must be the love coming from the cosmic mental plane and from the second series of petals of the cosmic mental plane? I guess we could, you know, think of it. We think of our personal love coming from our own astral body, and a more impersonal type of love coming from our second tier of petals. But just think of how cosmically impersonal this great love must be. You know, it's almost like the cosmic personhood is involved in the personality nature of these great beings like the planetary and solar logos, and involves their cosmic astral body. But from a more impersonal level is coming the love of their egoic lotus. And in the case of the solar egoic lotus, it's found on the first subplane of the cosmic mental plane. Of course, yeah, that's a whole nother problem. You know, when you have an egoic lotus, over how many subplanes can it be spread? I mean, we're told that the human egoic lotus of the initiate human being, or even one who is advanced and approaching the first initiation, the birth of the Christ in the heart, is found on the second sublevel of our mental plane. But then the jewel in the lotus apparently is not. The jewel in the lotus has a different vibratory level altogether, which is sort of between Manas and Buddhi. I think I've begun to take that into consideration rather more lately, thinking that, well, if the egoic lotus was on the second subplane, then the jewel in the lotus is as well. But apparently it has its own place And its place is, in a sense, it may be, in a way, even higher than the place of the monastic permanent atom, which is found on the first subplane of the systemic mental plane. Well, all of these intricacies, you know, will have to be revealed when we are more equipped to study cosmic structure. Right now, we're just getting a dim outline of how things are put together, and, you know, with a tremendous respect then for the intelligence that made all this possible. You know, right now we're arguing in our society about whether intelligent design exists or whether there's really a God, and whether all of this could have come together almost by accident, just on the basis of chance, or whether in fact there was a great creator behind it all. And it seems to me that occultism points to not only the great creator, but to an almost never-ending ascending series of creators, each of which includes the creators lower than them, a pyramidal structure, a hierarchical structure of our cosmos. So anyway, this love pouring forth from the cosmic astral plane and also from the cosmic mental plane in the heart of the sun, or the heart of the solar logos, as it here seems to be expressed, is coming from the one about whom naught may be said, and especially from the cosmic Buddhic nature of that one about whom naught may be said, which we call the Pleiades. And it is the love limited by desire and for that which is desired, or for that which is desired. We could say for is on behalf of, and for that which is desired, limited by desire and on behalf of that which is desired, or a love for that which is desired. And what is desired is manifestation and expression through the lower lives. It is love pouring itself out into forms which are stimulated and aided thereby. Remember that word, stimulation. Stimulation. When we talked about the 22 methods, from the 22 methods of a group interplay, always when we talked about the second sub-method of any ray, the word stimulation was used, was it not? Probably, you know, just reminding ourselves where we are here. We're on page, where are we? Approximately 1230, something like that. Yeah, we're approximately there. And if we just go back a little bit, look, here we are. These are the 22 methods. Really 21 plus the taking the entirety of all 21 as one more. Stimulation, 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 you see. Ray methods of activity. So the word stimulation is closely related to the second ray. It is, and to love. It is love pouring itself out into forms which are stimulated and aided thereby. It is the fulfillment of divine obligations. So still a cosmic karmic factor, a cosmic karmic factor is involved. It is fulfillment of divine obligations incurred in the dim and distant kalpas which antedate the triplicity of solar systems which we can dimly vision. So we're talking about, talk about escape from karma. There really isn't any, you know. Karma is action. So the karma which the present solar logos incurred when he was not a solar logos. the obligations, the cosmic, his part in the cosmic balance as he ascends. So Our obligations continue, even as we ascend in our spiritual status. So to these lesser lives, the Solar Logos has an obligation, and therefore he desires within his cosmic astral body to fulfill that cosmic obligation, because these lives are now found upon the cosmic physical plane, which he can influence through a great outpouring of love. It is this love pouring itself out into forms which are stimulated and aided thereby. It is the fulfillment, and I'm going to finally make this British spelling legitimate, fulfillment of divine obligations incurred in the dim and distant kalpas. And here, notice the word kalpas. This word suggests Maha kalpas. Okay, and let's see, what have we got here? Maha kalpas, right. Suggests Maha kalpas, or solar systemic periods before the Solar Logos. Our Solar Logos was a Solar Logos. So solar systemic periods before our Solar Logos was a Solar Logos. Let's just put it like this. It's doubtful that every atom is going to become in and of itself a Solar Logos. Or that while the many re-become the one and find themselves involved in ever larger structures, they do not in and of themselves become those larger structures, but amalgamate with others of their kind in a kind of shared identity which works through these structures. This is an aspect of emanation theory, which applies to the many re-becoming the one through spiritual amalgamation. So I just have to throw that in somewhere here. It's a little out of order, but I just every once in a while try to restate that. The many become the one through spirit amalgamation. Or, let me put it in another way, monadic amalgamation. And, of course, the implications of this are tremendous. We're probably, in other words, from a practical point of view, we are probably right now interrelating with those who, with us, will become certain higher entities on the various cosmic paths. In other words, it's not to be imagined that the individual entity will of itself become a Solar Logos, but say you were on the path of the Solar Logo, there would be other lives with whom one was on that path, and who, through a process of monadic amalgamation or re-amalgamation, would become together a Solar Logos. Or would they re-become the Solar Logos they already were? This is pretty abstruse and has to be thought through. Suffice it to say, we're all, bound for glory, as it were, and even now are expressing gloriously on the higher levels of our own nature. There's no place in the cosmos we are not. We are the universal logos, not just in part, but in full. It all depends on what we mean by we. This tiny little ring pass knot, which is perceived by that amount of monadic perception, which is immersed in matter, that is not our entirety by any means. And that is not the universal logos per se. But as a monadic extension of the universal logos, we are actually the universal logos, essentially, in its entirety. And this simply means that the many points are all part of one point, and in fact there's only one point in all of cosmos. All right, so these are obligations incurred in a dim and distant kalpas, which antedate the triplicity of solar systems which we can dimly vision. Of course, there's also a triplicity of solar systems which preceded the triplicity which we can dimly vision, the one ahead and the one immediately behind. That's the, with ours, the triplicity we can dimly vision, but the implication is that, well, the statement is that we're in the fifth Mahamanvantara, and that means that three had to go before the previous solar system. And it is the Father of Light in a cosmic connotation pouring himself out for that which binds him and which it is his Dharma to lift up to his throne. The solar logos as the Father of Light in our context, as this beautiful phrase, and we think of the light of the soul, the Leonian light of the soul, law of the soul, and light of the soul. Well, there's something here that is so great. This section of the book is incredible. It's beyond belief. It's beyond our wildest imagination. A great outpouring of love. A love pouring itself out into forms which are stimulated and aided thereby. It is the fulfillment of divine obligations incurred in the dim and distant kalpas which antedate the triplicity of solar systems which we can dimly vision. Well, some of this obligation could have been undertaken. Some of the obligation could have been undertaken when the solar logos was manifesting through his earlier solar systems, the first three. But also, as karma does tend to continue, and interaction continues, more out of a sense of love, I think, than out of pressure and force upon the one who fulfills the karma, then it's possible that even when the solar logos was not yet a solar logos, that obligations were undertaken. So, I'm just going to label this a point for consideration. And it is the Father of Light in a cosmic connotation pouring himself out for that which binds him to be obligated is to be tied to, and to which, notice, it is his Dharma to lift up to his throne. This is his the task which relates to the expression of his nature. Maybe we should keep that nature, capitalize that. It's not necessarily simply a compulsion from a higher life. We know how we differentiate between Dharma and karma in our life. So much of our karma is what we are forced to do by some inner or higher power, whether or not it correlates with the expression of our energy structure. But a Dharma, the expression of a Dharma, always correlates with the expression, with the nature of our energy structure. with the qualities of our energy structure. Let's see, so let me put this down. Dharma correlates with the expression of the qualities of our energy structure, energy structure. So he will lift them up to his throne. This does not mean that they will be of the same status, but they will come at least to the foot of the throne, just as we rise, in a sense, to the foot of the solar angel, feet of the solar angel. It is not possible to picture the revelation of the love of the solar logos as it reveals itself to the eye of the illuminated seer, oh, nor to show the nature of the cosmic Lord of Sacrifice as he limits himself in order to save. What a thrilling idea. I mean, this is the solar logos as savior of all within his solar system. But these are real energies, and there will be represented to the eye of the illuminated seer the effect of this love energy upon all that it touches. I just want to read that again. It's so beautiful. And I want to, of course, emphasize it a bit here. It is not possible to picture the revelation of the love of the solar logos as it reveals itself to the eye of the illuminated seer, nor to show the nature of the cosmic Lord of Sacrifice as he limits himself in order to save. And think about this. He's the solar logos is a cosmic Lord of Sacrifice. Sanat Kumara is a planetary Lord of Sacrifice, albeit with cosmic consciousness. In other words, even the globe lords, they're considered to be cosmic beings and chain lords and so forth. But the solar logos is in fact a great cosmic being, and Sanat Kumara, as an extension of the planetary logos, a lesser cosmic being, a planetary being in fact. And the Christ, look at that line. I mean, there's a line there, isn't there? And the Christ, who is an intra-planetary Lord of Sacrifice. So there is this line of connection between the great solar logos, the Savior, our planetary logos when working through his second ray soul, a Savior, the Christ and head of the hierarchy, the Savior of humanity. We have to say that Sanat Kumara is more the Savior of the entire planet. We have to relate the Saviorship of the Christ more to humanity, I would say. That would keep things in the proper scope, I think. At each step along the path, the extent of that love and sacrifice is opened up as the disciple knows himself to be, in tiny measure, also a Lord of Sacrifice and love. So beautiful. So the disciple comes to know as well that he, in imitation of the Christ, will be a tiny Lord of Sacrifice and love. And so we can put up here this line, how it goes, the solar Lord of Sacrifice, the planetary Lord of Sacrifice, the intra-planetary Lord of Sacrifice, and the tiny Lord of Sacrifice and Love. So, and who are these? Well, the solar logos, for example. All right, I'm going to make another abbreviation. I did a lot of this in the years when doing the commentaries on Cosmic Fire. It seemed important to collect these. For example, Sanat Kumara, for example, the Interplanetary Lord of Sacrifice, the Christ, for example, and the Tiny Lord of Sacrifice and Love, the Disciple, for example. Okay. And each, at each step of the path, the extent of that love and sacrifice is opened up to the, as the disciple knows himself to be, in tiny measure, also a Lord of sacrifice and love. Not just a, I misstated it, not a tiny Lord of sacrifice and love, but in tiny measure, also a Lord of sacrifice and love, capable of growing into the greater sacrifice and love of these greater beings mentioned. It can only be appreciated as the two inner rows of egoic petals are unfolded. So is the petal of love and sacrifice for the human being, right? The petals of love and sacrifice for the human being. Knowledge would not reveal it, and it is only as man transcends knowledge and knows himself to be something non-separative and inclusive that this particular revelation comes to him. The beauty is there will always be ever greater revelations, and the the limitation on this is that from a lesser point of revelation, no, a point, okay, point of revelation, one cannot conceive of the greater points of revelation. So literally, when we're in a certain state of consciousness, we have no idea, really, of what the next state of consciousness revealed by the next quality may be. It just comes to us as a surprise, because we tend to interpret that impending revelation in terms of the revelation we now experience. And it's just different. So we always have to be open to the surprises which divine revelation may present or will present to us. And not we must not interpret the impending greater, the, what's called it, impending greater, in terms of the present lesser. The new revelation will be other than the type of revelation we now experience. Okay. So, this is the secret behind the seven symbols, each of which hides an aspect of the sevenfold love of God as it is revealed through the hierarchy of beings, or as the Son reveals it, who is the sum total of the love of God. So, the Son aspect is the sum total of the love of God, and the seven manifested creative hierarchies are revelations of this sonship. This is the secret. Now, you know, just to, I think we had these and we can review them. We can review them. And here for review they are hierarchy number manifested hierarchy one, the closed petaled 12-petaled lotus, golden. That's the divine flames. The divine builders, the seven colored spheres, each with a central fire. The triple flowers, a triple flame hovering over a golden altar. It rather reminds you, doesn't it, of the escape of the green bird with the five wings. We had the flaming altar and some factor of liberation. A third ray factor was liberated from the previous solar system. Then the initiates or the well, it's not the perfect ones. It's the initiates, and what else are they called? I think, well, we'll come back to that. The symbol is the sun standing with outstretched arms in space. Then the Makara, or the perfect ones, the fifth creative hierarchy, the five-pointed star with the symbol of System 1 in the center. And I brought that kind of thought form of System 1 with those green swastikas turning upon each other into the picture. And then the lunar lords, the sixth creative hierarchy, a silver moon surmounted by an equal arm cross, discussing that. And then the blinded lives, a man reversed with his eyes closed. And note the similarity to Aquarius. That's what I put in for myself at that point. Let's see, here we have, here are the laws and symbols, and those are the laws of the soul. And here we will have the seven hierarchies, and if we expand this a bit, we'll see that were called Lords of Sacrifice, the initiates, Lords of Sacrifice. That's the name for the fourth or ninth, ninth manifested creative hierarchy, fourth manifested and nine when you count from above, the human creative hierarchy. All right. So let's see now where we are. We might at the same time consider the type of force wielded by a particular hierarchy. Now, the secret behind the seven symbols, each one of which hides an aspect of the sevenfold love of God, and that's so important, each one of these symbols hides an aspect of the sevenfold love of God. We could have discussed them in that way. Logoic love, monadic love, triadal love, or atmic love, Buddhic love, mental love, emotional love, and physical love. The great power of magnetism and cohesion is involved with the expression of each one of these hierarchies, each one of which hides an aspect of the sevenfold love of God as it is revealed through the hierarchies of beings, i.e., through them and their rays and signs, or as the sun reveals it, who is the sum total of love of God. And we might at the same time consider the type of force wielded by a particular hierarchy, and that's going to be expressed in ray, zodiacal, and planetary terms. And we have already been considering these as we went along. Well, look where we are now, friends. We are entering something called the fire of spirit. Now, you know, he spent the first more than 100 pages, I suppose, maybe even almost 200 pages, discussing fire by friction, the fires of matter. Then the bulk of the book, probably 800 pages or so, or more, 900, is discussing, in essence, solar fire, though the subjects are many. And now we're in section 3, discussing only for the very end of the book, the fire of spirit. This shows you where we human beings actually are in our development and in our understanding of the fires which exist. So electric fire now will be our subject. So we go forward into electric fire, and I just want us to remember that in our solar system, electric fire is equivalent to Buddhi, or to really cosmic Buddhi. Such as the Buddhi which the solar logos expresses, having received it from the one about whom naught may be said, the one greater than the logos, through the heart of the sun. So we constantly remember that the major ray is the ray of love wisdom, it's the indigo ray, and that all of us, no matter what our ray differentiations may be, or what signs of the zodiac we may be expressing at a certain time, or planetary powers, all of that is secondary to the great love wisdom ray, which is correlated with cosmic Buddhi. So we really cannot escape the love energy. Well, we certainly have not fulfilled it. Why would we want to escape it? We cannot escape the love energy as expressed by our solar logos, who is a heart center in A1 above the logos, and a heart center within a solar plexus center, as I conceive it, within another higher one above the logos, within a super constellational logos, a logos called the unknown, who has for its chakras constellations. All right. The electric fire of spirit, certain basic statements, the nature of the cosmic paths, and seven esoteric stanzas. And what I'm going to do, probably we're just going to go through this certain basic statements, because when we deal with the nature of the cosmic paths, what I've done based on some old compilations is to gather everything said about the cosmic paths in Initiation Human and Solar, or at least everything said in the sections on the cosmic paths, because probably scattered throughout the books are other things about the cosmic paths, and they could be made up in compilations as well. But everything said in Initiation Human and Solar, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and the Rays and the Initiations, plus the esoteric stanzas which relate to each of the cosmic paths. And that will be the most difficult and demanding work that I could possibly address, being totally inadequate to address it, but we students, we have to address what we are given. If we don't, even with our first faltering attempt to address it, what's to be done? Then DK gave it in vain. It would not make any impact. There would be no approach and no possibility of assimilation. So I make excuses for myself, knowing my own inadequacy in approaching these things, but still thinking that it must be done, and that as the group begins to ponder it in the new schools and in times when such pondering is more allowed and provided for, that there will be progress in the understanding. All that can be known exists. And in our little darkened rooms, which is a kind of metaphor for our state of consciousness, we have just about no idea of the revelations which await. We just need to get the idea that we do live in a darkened room, and that consciousness can always be expanded, and that this is a critical undertaking, the expansion of consciousness. It's what has to be done on our particular planet, and it's what has to be done in our solar system, with its emphasis upon the expansion of consciousness. This is, after all, for our solar logos, the sole solar system. He's already had his personality and mental solar systems. Sometimes I think, you know, that the third solar system from the very first was the mental solar system, that of lower mind, and, well, that the last, or the previous solar system, had to be the solar system of the integrated personality, which is based, of course, upon the mind, just as it is, I think, for the human being. So, going on then, certain basic statements. In connection with this final section of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, dealing with the electric fire of the spirit, it should be remembered that it would be quite impossible to impart information of a definite character. This subject is considered from the standpoint of the esoteric student to be devoid of form, and therefore incognizable by the lower concrete mind. Well, devoid of form as found on the found within the dense physical body of the solar logos. Gaseous, liquid, and solid. Solid, so to speak. So that's why he said, you know, from the standpoint of the esoteric student, devoid of form, because when we're dealing with spirit, we're still on the cosmic physical plane. At least when we're dealing with spirit as it relates to the human being, we're still on the cosmic physical plane. So, we consider those the formless worlds, but they're not really, because we know that a form is really a cohesive magnetic interplay between subtle energies, and a sustained cohesive magnetic interplay. Form is really a sustained cohesive, I'm not spelling it, magnetic interplay between subtle energies. A subtle, quote, standing wave, as it were. The nature of spirit can only be intelligibly revealed to the higher grades of initiates. That is, to those who, through the medium of work effected in the third initiation, have been put in conscious contact with their Father in heaven, the monad. So, a spirit can only be understood understood by those who have conscious monadic contact and later infusion. It all begins at the third degree, really. Esoteric students, disciples, and initiates of lower degree are developing contact with the soul or the second aspect, and only when this contact is firmly established can the higher concept be entertained, at least invited in for consideration, even if not fully understood. Esoteric students, disciples, and initiates of lower degree are developing contact with the soul or the second aspect, and only when this contact is firmly established can the higher concept be entertained. And, of course, it will be entertained as a concept. See what I mean? As a concept and not realized as an energy, at least not at first. First the concept, and then the revelation of the energy. The nature of spirit is dealt with in the New Testament in one of the esoteric statements addressed by the Great Lord to the initiate Nicodemus. Notice here the Great Lord. This is the Christ. But sometimes the term Great Lord can be applied to Sanakumara. So the initiate Nicodemus, as he was an initiate of the second degree, notice DK still calls him an initiate, it may be supposed that he had some glimmering, a little bit of light No clarity, no sustained light, but a flickering of light with an occasional appearance of the true revelation only to quickly fade. Some glimmer of the rising sun at dawn, but no true sight of the sun. Some glimmering of understanding as to the meaning of the words, which were spoken to him as part of his training in preparation for the third initiation. The wind, prana, or spirit, bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh nor whither it goeth. So is everyone that is born of the Spirit. To be born of the Spirit, be born of the Spirit is to have intuitive instinct. Not just spiritual instinct, but intuitive instinct, as DK tells us, it is to be born into the world of the third initiation. Notice how vitality, prana, is connected directly with spirit. It's sometimes prana is called a vitality. Sometimes vitality is called life, and sometimes spirit. And the usual, the will, the term listeth here means where it wills, where it wills to blow. Bloweth where it listeth, where it wills to go, and thou hearest the sound thereof. In other words, there's a sudden appearance and disappearance that connects with the power of one who is born of the Spirit. Sudden appearance and disappearance when dealing with one born of the Spirit, the true initiate. So is everyone born of the Spirit. We would have to really ponder this, because it is connected with the subtlest aspect of the human being and the usual chains of causality which appeal to the logical mind do not here apply. There is implied here, if I can say this, I would say implied, a kind of omnipresence. And an ability to enter and leave at will. To appear and disappear at will. To be confined in any way by conventionalities or by time and space, as usually considered. Right. Okay. Two ideas are conveyed in this thought form, those of emanating sound and direction. Okay. Emanating sound and direction. Let's see further what we have. Okay. I think what I have to do here is go to the actual book. Right. There it is. Emanating sound and direction, and that which is the result of the sound. This is evolution and the effect of the directing energy or activity of spirit. From the point of view of consciousness, these are the only things which the disciple can intelligently comprehend. That of emanating sound and direction. The evolution is the effect of the directing energy or activity of spirit. So that is the important idea here, and I think what I have to do, I think it would be a little better to put our Parabrahm picture a little lower, I think. Okay. I know Parabrahm is here. Oh, I know where it is. Okay. Let's take this down. Well, there it is. All right. I'll have to put it back. All right. We'll do this with it. And we'll put it right in here. It would be just a little easier to deal with, I think. Two ideas are conveyed in this thought form, those of an emanating sound, and if you think about it, you know, there are great sounds which come forth on the monadic plane. Actually, from the logoic plane as well. The A is sounding, and the AU on the monadic plane, or even the O on the monadic plane. Maybe it's kind of a second solar system adaptation of the AU. Two ideas are conveyed, those of an emanating sound and direction. Emanating sound and direction, and that which is the result of the sound. So we are dealing with the first and third rays. This is evolution and the effect of the directing energy or activity of spirit. Well, evolution, it's a propelled through sound. Through sound. And the forms which are the effect of the sound and its directing or direction. So, here again. 1, 2. Two ideas are conveyed in this thought form, those of an emanating sound and direction, and that which is the result of the sound. This is evolution and the effect of the directing energy, or, see, evolution is really a forward-moving energy, a directed energy. Evolution is the energy of purpose directed by will. Maybe we can say that. Okay. Evolution is the energy of purpose directed and implemented by will. The wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but cannot tell whence it cometh or whither it goeth. There will always be according to the purpose which the will has to implement, there will always be an unaccountable redirecting of this sound. At least the logic of the lower worlds will not understand it, but those who understand the purpose will realize why there is a redirection of the sound from moment to moment to those contexts in which the next phase of the purpose, as planned, needs to be fulfilled. So here those born of purpose, of will, are fulfilling purpose in ways unaccountable to the lower logic. They are marching to an inner drummer. That's Vulcan, as representative of the spirit. So, Let's see what further. Thou hearest the sound thereof. Well, perhaps they speak on behalf of purpose. There is a sound which directs them, that we cannot hear. Sound which directs them, that we cannot hear. And also what they say to represent the sound. But we do not understand their ways, because they respond to a standing pattern which we cannot cognize or see. So why does the one born of spirit do what he or she does, always in connection with the divine will, which is serving the plan, which is serving the purpose? And that purpose is expressed as a continuing, sustained sound. Purpose is expressed as a continuing, sustained sound, a monadic sound. Seven great sounds of the monadic plane. All right. Then we will be moving into, so two ideas are conveyed in this thought form, those of an emanating sound and direction. In other words, directed sound. Sound directed towards a particular manifestation or action, and that which is the result of the sound. It, you know, the first and third aspects are coming together here, and purpose, in a way, is sustaining the second aspect. It's kind of the second aspect of the first aspect, the second part of the first aspect. So there's an entirely different type of attunement of the person born of will, born of the spirit. So is everyone that is born of the spirit. And that's just another name for the third initiation, isn't it? To be born of the spirit. Well, okay, this prepares us for the third degree, and we can ponder on our connection with as much of the divine purpose as we can realize, and of the sounds we must make representing the sound we hear, that sound being purpose. And some minor sounds, perhaps, are coming through the plan which expresses purpose in time and space. I think what we'll do now, we won't get into the chart on Parabrahm, not yet. Rather, why don't we say that this is the... We'll do the great invocation. Every once in a while, we really must do that. And then we'll go on to number 14. So, here we have the G. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay. Thank you, friends. We will move on shortly and get into this amazing section here. So this will be the end of Cosmic Fire Web Commentaries. Much harder than writing EAA for Esoteric Astrology Adventures. Number 13A, 13B. And it's page 1220... we're already there. Page 1231. Something has happened. We've had to skip a couple of pages here, I think, because of the way the designs are laid out. Let me just check this. From A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, we'll go to page 1230. Yes, that's one chart. And immediately before, we had page 1229, and a little bit was skipped in order to bring the title page forward. So, well, we're making progress with the pages, aren't we? All right. Page 1231, and this is the beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries number 14A, page 1231. And in a moment, we're going to look at this large chart. We already have been looking at it quite a bit. Right. So, we'll see you shortly.